Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio. The Nerd Hour.
Tattoos and touchdowns.
The Sunny Show.
You're listening to The Shoot.
Trust us, we're hot.
Masters of none.
360 on 420.
The Conti and Kenny Show.
It's Daytime Divas with Marianne and Kitty.
OSW Review.
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Alcohol by volume.
This is Unsigned with J5.
It's time for Dutch and Royce.
No! Welcome to Rage Quit Radio.
Get ready for Hippo Juice.
Mark Radio.
The Elvis and Albert Show.
Cousin Joe Show.
Radio Meltdown.
It's High Society Radio.
Brainstorm Radio.
It's all about me with Halls and Rorschach.
Daddy Wampus.
Orange Room.
Warlock Radio!
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zooms, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Obviously, I was... never mind. I'm not going to explain it, but...
No, explain radio to Ashley.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Would you mind taking Colin for a walk about 8?
Huh? That's 2,000 hours. Oh, yeah.
Now, here's your host. That's Ashley, and this is...
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Hopefully you're all okay. Apologies last week for all the sound issues and all that sort of shit. I had a dodgy cable, I bought a new one, and I should sound okay, hopefully. No, I should be fine now. I've been testing this all week, and I should sound all British and sexy, as I usually sound. Welcome to the show, Antisocial Game Radio, now live at... on morelikeradio.com, it's new time slot of 9 p.m. UK time. Now the old clocks have changed. And I think it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern. Thanks for everyone turning up and tuning in and downloading and listening. Go to morelikeradio.org. Tons of other shows. Morelikeradio.com, tons of shows on station. Listen to every single one of them like I do. And that's true, I do. I listen to every damn thing. I just wish there was more hours in a day. Good bit of everything this week. I played a good few games. I treated myself several times. Bits and pieces. And I'll go into the usual sort of bullshit, as I usually do. If you want to contact the show, if you want to email us, it's antisocialgamerradio@yahoo.co.uk. If you want to join the Facebook group, come and join. There's always discussions and... all sorts of stuff going on. And as soon as there's a decent trailer for a decent-looking game, I will post it. I'm still waiting on a new trailer for Aliens Isolation. But I say, as today is April Fool's Day, I'm not posting any damn thing because, I don't know, why do people still mess around with with the internet? It's like, yeah, it's like every day belongs to the Onion. But yeah, so if you want to join the Facebook group, it's facebook.com/group/MNRGamerLobby. Like the Facebook page, up to 90, 10 away from 100. I'll be glad when I get to 100. It's facebook.com/antisocialgamerradio. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's @MLRGamerRadio. Yeah, I say I played a few things this week. Not too much, usual stuff. I mean, I've done my Pokemon, you know, as usual, blah, blah, blah. I'm sort of breeding, and I'm thinking about a new VGC team. I mean, I've got, was it April? 1st of April now. I've got just under 2 months to be ready. I mean, I've got a team, sort of, but I'm thinking about other stuff, and there's battles going on, and there's like an April friendly coming up, which I'm not going to be bothered with because it's all singles and not doubles. I'm like, okay, whatever. But yeah, I sort of think of a new team to beat certain types, and I don't know. I'll run some tests and do some bits and pieces. But yeah, I say, you know, bits and pieces on that. That's usual stuff. But I say I did. Shit. Sound like Foghorn fucking Leghorn. As I said, I did treat myself to several things this week. As I talk about Pokemon, I'll keep it Pokemon theme for this moment. Last night, because I listened to It's Super Effective, and Will and Steve have been playing Pokemon Troze, which for some reason they gave a different name over here, which is completely fucking stupid. It's called Pokemon Link Battle, and it's basically Bejeweled, sort of, if anyone else remembers, was it Street Fighter, the puzzle fighter? It's sort of like that. You match up three or more pictures of Pokemon that are the same, and it launches an attack against... launches an attack against the Pokemon that you're trying to catch. It gets it down low enough, that health all vanishes, and you catch it, and you just basically do that again and again and again. So it's some people say it's very... addictive. I'm finding it semi-addictive. It's one of those, a toilet game. I mean, because I was on the toilet earlier and I was playing it. But yeah, I say it's fun. Yeah, I'm not going to say it's not. It's a decent game. The graphics are actually better than I thought it'd be. I mean, that's why I bought it, because I was like, I looked at the original one, I think, came on the Game Boy Advanced, I think. I've never had it. I was just watching some videos on YouTube. And then I saw like a trailer for this new one, and I was like, wow, the graphics are pretty good. Let's dip your hand into your pocket and buy a game. And I did, and it's quite fun. You know, I'm playing it for a good few hours. I think I'm at stage two, and it's fun. It's very fun. It's semi-addictive to me. And, you know, it's something to play when I'm not playing the main Pokemon or Donkey Kong Country or any of the other games that I do want to pick up this, soon anyway. I mean, there's like, you know, I was literally going over like the 3DS games. I mean, I've sold a bunch the other day to play to pay for my, you know, hotel for Manchester for the national tournament. But I mean, like, there's, you know, Star Fox I want to get. I mean, I want to get that 3D Mario, Super Mario 3D Land. I think that's the one because the world's on the Wii U. What else? There's a bunch of stuff. You know, it's sort of, I mean, Bravery Default, I want to get that. I mean, I've got the demo of that. I still haven't played it. I need to, you know, give it a go. What else? I'm just trying to think. I mean, because I had, what the hell was it? Zelda, Ocarina of Time. I got so far and I thought, fuck it, I can't be arsed. And, you know, whatever, I'll go watch the ending on YouTube. I think that's pretty much like one of the few of the main games for the 3DS that I want to pick up. I mean, there's bits and pieces coming out here and there, but... You know, I mean, I use my 3DS for my Pokemon stuff. That's my main play when I'm out and about on the road, that sort of stuff. But yeah, so Pokemon Troze, it's pretty good. You know, pick it up if you like Pokemon, like I do. And it's a puzzle game, so it's lots of fun. And it's very, very simple. And it's, you know, I mean, the price, it's a decent enough price. I mean, it cost me about £7.19, which is probably about $8 or $9. You know, pick it up if you've got some spare cash lying around. I mean, I treat myself, so whatever. But I say, one of the first things I did treat myself to was Dark Souls 2. Now, I played the first one, didn't get too far with it, because it's really, really hard. This one's almost as hard, not as hard. I'm finding it more easier to get into, to be honest. I mean, the way it's set out, makes it a lot easier for newcomers to the series. I mean, it's like the third game, but the second Dark Souls, because it was Demon's Souls on the PlayStation. But now it's, you know, Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2. But yeah, it's fun. It's really, really good. I am enjoying playing it. I had to give it a rest because it was literally pissing me the fuck off. Because I'm finding out bits and pieces as I play through. I mean, the enemies respawn whenever you get to a bonfire. Basically, what happens is you're some sort of cursed guy, and you have to get from one point to the next, and there's like monsters in your way. And if you die, you basically collect souls throughout the game from killing your enemies. You die, the souls basically just drop down to the ground, and you have to get back to your body to collect the souls. And, you know, rinse and repeat. But the thing is, I was told that there's only so many... What's it? So many... when you get to the bonfire, which restores your health, and that, it also restores the... what is it? The enemies that you fight. But they're actually... I think they've... It's weird. They've done this to make it easier, but it sort of irks me slightly because, you know, what I like doing is, you know, killing all the enemies, getting the souls, rinse and repeat, doing the same thing over and over again till basically all the enemies are destroyed. So I can, you know, use the souls which help you level up your character. You go to a bonfire, there's a woman there, and she says, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then you said, yep, level up. And it just sort of, you put a certain amount of souls is like a currency, and you basically put that into your character, and it upgrades your stats, your strength, and attack, and various other bits and pieces. It's not super in depth, but it's very good. It is a really good game, no matter how much it pisses me off. I mean, there's several different classes of character. I mean, you've got like, I think I'm playing as the knight, and there's like a cleric, there's a sorcerer, there's a bandit, there's a warrior, and a swordsman. I think that's all of them. It's pretty good if I remember all that. I've been playing as the knight mainly because he's seen the best. But, I mean, I do want to, you know, mess around as the swordsman and probably a bandit. I think the bandit's got a crossbow, so... But, I mean, she was, you know, crossbow for long range. But, I mean, I'm okay with the swordsman. You know, sorry, with the knight. We're using the swords. I'm sort of managed to do decent enough damage. And, I mean, you know, as I upgrade my strength, I get stronger and stronger. And, you know, there's better and better swords and items. And, you know, it's I am finding it a lot easier. It's just... It just get tedious. Because, you know, I mean, the good point... So I say the good point and the bad point of going to a bonfire, save it, you know, restoring your health, also restores the enemy. But because they've actually, I think they've taken this out since Dark Souls 1, that the enemies stop respawning after a certain point, means that basically I can't sort of you know, just get as infinite a number of souls to upgrade my character really early in the game. It sort of not breaks it, but it sort of makes it. It still keeps it easier, but it still keeps the challenge flowing, which, to be honest, I don't mind. I mean, the enemies aren't that strong because, I mean, in Dark Souls, I mean, I didn't get too far. I mean, I know Royce was playing this, and I think Ryan was playing this as well. A bunch of us were playing this. But, I mean, there was, like, several enemies that you would fight at the same time, and they would kill you quite easily. Whereas this, it's... there are groups of enemies near each other, but it's not an overwhelming number. I mean, there's like, you know, you'll see one, he'll see you and come after you, and then you sort of kill him, go further in, go after the next one. It's all fun. It's very good. I do enjoy it. It's not overly hard or overly simple. It's a, you know, it's a bit of both, but it's a lot. It's a very interesting game. I am sort of glad it's slightly easier, but I just wish they, you know, the bit where just can keep an infinite number of enemies, and I can keep fighting and fighting all the things to basically just, you know, get as many souls as I can. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I'm taking a break from it now because, I say, it was pissing me the fuck off. I mean, for this other thing I treat myself on. But I you know, Dark Souls 2, if you like a challenge, and it's the very classic style. I mean, I had to try. I was at work trying to explain to them, a mate of mine. It's, you know, the sort of ghouls and goblins, ghosts, you know, the Capcom original. You know, the knight in the armor. He gets hit, his armor falls off. You know, that sort of stuff. It's very much like that. But yeah, I mean, there's so much I want to do in the game. You know, I'd love to sit there and complete it. I don't know how. I mean, because, you know, this is sort of, it was supposed to be like a filler game until, you know, the middle of May when I get my PlayStation 4, when Watch Dogs comes out. But yeah, I mean, I'm sort of passing time with various other things. I mean, there's nothing really that I. There's the thing. There's nothing really that I want to pick up. So you know, the savings is helping me out quite a bit. I mean, you know, I have to keep buying games because you know it gives me something to talk about on the show. But yeah, Dark Souls 2, a great game. Picking up the graphics, you know, people have been moaning about the graphics. The graphics are fine. I mean, I've got a 1080p TV and, you know, PlayStation 3 makes weird noises occasionally. But, you know, it's still fine. It looks good. I mean, there are some really tough bosses. I mean, there's like some sort of, I think they're called ogres, I think, because I'm looking up bits and pieces. But they're like giant rhinos right at the beginning of the game. Can't beat the shit out of them for the life of me. It's actually... one hit, they quickly swing around, punch you, and then they fall on top of you. I mean, that's the thing. That's why I got stuck when I was playing, because I sort of went into the... I knew where I was going, because I'd watched the video, which is basically how I've been playing, sort of, so I know what I'm facing. It gives me a leg up. Cheating, yes, maybe, but it makes it easier and I don't, you know, get so frustrated. But I actually went into the first boss, who I can't beat, because, I don't know, I need to keep leveling up and doing bits and pieces, get more souls. I mean, there is, you know, considering what I know about the leveling up system now, when it comes to, you know, the souls running out when, you know, you go to the bonfire too many times, you kill so many enemies so many times, you know, I will need to keep doing it again. And, you know, say that's it becomes a bit tedious. But, I mean, I did go into the boss fights thinking I could come back on myself and not actually stay there because the cutscene triggers and then basically you're locked in this room with the boss who is this great big... it looks like a tree. It looks like Treebeard from Lord of the Rings. But it's this great big monster sort of thing. And it sort of rips off one of his own arm like halfway through the fight to use it as a club. And it is very tricky. I'm sort of trying to, you know, beat him. It's a bit hard, but, you know, I'll do it eventually. But, I mean, as I say, I died, so all my souls got trapped in this one room with the boss. So about 3,000 souls in there with the boss. I'm like, okay. Let's take a break from this and we'll come back to it. I'll start a new playthrough and then just sort of, you know, keep doing the old, getting as many souls as possible, upgrade my character. I'm trying to say, I'm trying to find a, not like a character customization thing, but where I should put the souls in what stat points. I mean, it's kind of easy, you know, the swords use it in the strength. But if you're like a sort of sorcerer and cleric, you put it into magic, that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's you know, even I think my swordsman has the knight has some magic as well. But you know, it's a lot of fun, and you know, it's really really good. It's so tedious at the moment. But I mean, I say I had to stop because it was frustrating me. So I treated myself to something else. I wasn't too sure I was going to get this, but I'm like, you know, I was talking about last week. If you could make it out through the crappy audio, you know, the classic games, you know, the remakes, that sort of stuff. I went and picked up Final Fantasy X, Final Fantasy X-2 HD remastered. The game's amazing. I mean, it's Final Fantasy. We've played it all before, and you know I've played this before, and you know it's so good. I was talking to the woman in the shop when I was buying this. I was like, this was like the last great Final Fantasy game before they went shit. And you know, she said, well, what about 12? And I'm like, I was polite. I had to be polite. But it's like, you know, I mean, Final Fantasy 12, I think I remember Pinello was one of the characters, and that's about all I remember from it. And it's just, the game was, there was a bunny woman in it. But yeah, I mean, I can't remember the storyline or what it was all about. You know, if it's not memorable to me, it's not worth thinking about ever again. I mean, I remember more about playing Final Fantasy 11 than I do about playing Final Fantasy 12. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't, you know, Final Fantasy 12 wasn't the great. I mean, it's when, I don't even know what his name is, but it's when the bloke who did all the stories, he jumped off and started doing Lost Odyssey. Yeah, he went off to do, I think it was Windwalker Studios, I think that's the name of the studios. Yeah, he went and did Lost Odyssey, which is a good game. I just, you know, I got frustrated with that one as well. But yeah, so playing Final Fantasy X, I'm not too sure, you know, when I bought this, I was like, will I be playing X-2 or will I just sort of leave it? I'm thinking about sort of once I do finish Final Fantasy X, like playing it, but I'm not too sure. I mean, because, you know, I know the ending and I've seen it on YouTube because I did play this when it originally came out, you know, 10, 11 years ago. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it might be worth playing. I don't know. I'll probably get into it a little bit and then see what happens. But yeah, I mean, Final Fantasy X, it is the best Final Fantasy game to come out on the last generation of consoles. But yeah, I mean, it feels good. I say, you know, when I was playing this, and on the Facebook page, I was like, yeah, it feels very majestic, this game. It feels great to be playing a Final Fantasy game that's actually good. I mean, I don't think I was actually too keen on it when I first played it. I mean, it's a great game. You know, I wasn't questioning that. I'm just saying it just wasn't what I was used to. But now, having played 12, 13, and it's like, yeah, I'm in the mood for some classic Final Fantasy. But yeah, I mean, it is a really good game. And the graphics, they push the HD button, and it's a lot nicer now. It's whatever it is. But yeah, it's really fun and really enjoyable. And you know, I mean, I did my I'm sort of messed up slightly with my playthrough, because I did, you know, when I played it, I started playing it a few days ago when I got it. Sort of did my first playthrough, got to about where I am now on my second playthrough, but I chose the wrong sphere grid, because, as I say, I do like the sphere grid. I mean, I just sort of spent sort of a good hour and a half today just sort of fighting monsters again, just to earn, orbs and stuff, so I can upgrade my characters. Because I literally sort of forgot how the battle system actually worked, because with each Final Fantasy, the battle system is, it's different. And with this, it's like, you know, there is no, there is no level, there's no levels as such. I mean, isn't even the weapons are there's no difference between the weapons apart from the abilities on the weapon. You know, one sword has plus five in in strength, or it has the sensor ability, or and then you have like a shield, sort of shield type unit, which has plus five in HP, or something. You know, they're all different abilities for each different item, and It's really, really good. It's, I mean, because the whole sphere grid does dictate how your character grows. You know, you get your orbs and you move around the sphere grid, unlocking spheres as you go. Because I chose I think it's the expert one, because there's a normal one and the expert one. But I thought the expert one might have more orbs, and I think it does. But it's like, it's just too tricky trying to get around it from what I wanted to do. Because, I mean, when I first played this, I used the normal one. And I sort of maxed it out. Didn't have a problem with that. It was quite easy. But yeah, I say it does feel really good to play a Final Fantasy game again. But yeah, I mean, I am having fun, because it's sort of, I wanted to re-explain, because I'm a sort of old-fashioned romantic. I know I'll get the piss taken out of me for that. But I mean, I did want to experience the whole love story between Tidus and Yuna, and sort of see its... How now with sort of adult eyes, or how it all develops. I'm sort of interested in that sort of stuff, like how relationships develop. I'm writing a book, and there's a romance element in it, and sort of like pick up bits and pieces, and helps me write my book. But I want to sort of see how that plays out, and with all the different characters and how it all goes. And it's a Final Fantasy game. It's a great Final Fantasy game. But yeah, I say, bits and pieces. What have I got on here? Blitzball! Yes, Blitzball. That's why I started again as well, this playthrough. There's... when you finish the Blitzball tournament, there's one of the main bad guys. He uses his Aeon, which is this sort of... he summons this creature, and it's like this massive one. And they say you can get it in the game, and I had to do... because there's like these trials which you go through, and they're sort of like puzzle rooms. And you basically sort of go... through these puzzles using these orbs to open doors and stuff. And they said, well, if you get all these bits and pieces, you can unlock this one that this guy used. So I was like, okay. And I was like, well, can I go back on myself? And I was looking on the internet, just searching around and all that sort of stuff. And they said, yes, you can, but it takes a bit of time, because you've got to fight other monsters. And I'm like, well, bugger it. It's like, that's a pain. But then I was like, with the Blitzball, because I was sort of relearning how to play it, because it's like, I hadn't played this game in like 12, 13 years. So it's like, you know, because I was really good at the Blitzball game when it first came out on the PlayStation 2. But so I was like, you know, started again, went through it pretty quickly in about 5-6 hours, got to, you know, the temples, did what I needed to, found the items, which made me happy. So, you know, I'm closer to getting this. I'm sort of not doing a 100% playthrough, but doing the best playthrough that I could possibly do. I mean, when it comes to getting the ultimate weapons, I want to do those bits as well. You know, unlock all the abilities and, you know, go into it, like, fully prepared, you know. Just, you know, it's going to be fun. I mean, if I'm going to play this game again, I'm going to enjoy myself and just do pretty much everything that I can do to make the experience more enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, I did the Blitzball thing again, which I love Blitzball. It's such a fun game. I know I got a lot of attention for my my Facebook post was, I think, was it Blitzball was the third best imaginary sport next to Quidditch in American football. And a lot of people seem to have a good old laugh at that. But yeah, I mean, Blitzball, my second playthrough, because I'm sort of doing it. My first playthrough, I sort of did the tournament that you win the cup with as an automatic team. So we lost pretty much. But then I did a second playthrough. I think I lost the first game, but then sort of restarted and then played it again. And we beat them 2-0. So we won the cup and unlocked some other bits and pieces. But now I'm sort of, I can sort of play Blitzball anytime I want. So I'm sort of playing through it to get, you know, the better players so I can do well. And because I know one of the bits for the ultimate weapon, I need to have the team, I think, win so many matches or play so many matches. So basically I want to make sure I have a team that does, you know, does do well. But yeah, I mean, it's really good to be playing a decent Final Fantasy again. But yeah, I say, you know, I'm a lot of fun. I mean, it's weird sort of having a look at, well, I mean, the graphics are fine, but I mean, the lip syncing was terrible between the, you know, the English voice acting and, you know, the way it was done for Japan with the, you know, the way they, you know, for their, you know, own language. But I mean, even the audio, listen to it. I mean, I know several of the voice actors in it. I mean, you know, John DiMaggio, who was Bender in you know, Futurama, you know, Marcus Fenix in Gears of War. He plays Waka. He does a good job, actually. But I mean, there was like, I think it was James Arnold Taylor, who does voices Tidus. You know, he does a lot of voice acting stuff recently. And I was like, you know, I know his voice from various other bits and pieces, but I mean, his voice acting in this was terrible. I mean, I remember seeing an interview with him saying how there's like so many pages of dialogue, but it's like when he's like talking, it's like, you know, when he must have been doing this, it's like just reading it off as a line, not as part of a story's narrative. But I mean, you know, when they do like not the cutscenes, but it's the inner monologue stuff where he's like talking for, you know. You know, in a monologue talking, it's like, you know, it sounds more defined. But when it's like the character speaking, it's like there's a sort of jumble, there's no connection between one line and the next, that sort of thing. But I mean, it is a really good game, and I want to go back to playing it, and, you know, just keep playing and playing and playing and play more Blitzball, go through the story. I mean, there's so much I want to experience again with this. You know, it is a really good game, and it, you know, I say it's one of the last good Final Fantasies that we got. But I mean, hopefully with Final Fantasy 15, we might get something else. But I say, stay on the Final Fantasy for a second. I say, if anyone's out there playing Final Fantasy 14, go and give Limit Break Radio a listen. They're back on there. I used to listen to them. I mean, they stopped doing a show in about 2011. So go back, go and listen to them. They're doing it there because they've stopped playing Final Fantasy 11. They're all playing 14 now. It's a really good show. I mean, Nero's back in it, and Juxtaposition, hashtag Juxta for President. Juxta, such a funny bastard. He's so funny. But yeah, it's a really good show. So you want to look for, is it Limit Break Radio? Just look up Limit Break Radio, because there's like two of them. There's the one which is like a sort of white logo, I think it is, and there's one with a black logo, which has like a Radio Realm Reborn or something. That's the one you're after. Really good show. I say I've been listening to a few episodes while I was literally sort of killing monsters trying to get more orbs. It's a great show. Have a listen. I mean, each episode's like an hour long. But yeah, you know, it's a really, really good show. As I'm saying, pleasantries and thank yous. I think I won something on the Looker Bureau. I won a Cryogonal, which I am looking forward to collecting. They've mentioned the station and the show and me, which is all pretty nice. But yeah, thanks to them, and I will be in contact with you lot soon as I can get round to it, because I want that Cryogonal. But yeah, thanks to them. But yeah, I think that's literally all I've been playing this week. It's not too much. I mean, there's bits and pieces that are coming out, and you know, the stuff. I mean, you know, stuff in the news I want to talk about. But yeah, I say, getting tired now. But no, I say, we'll go into the topic for this week, which is going to be about RPGs, role play games. You know, as I wrote on my notes here, the building blocks for all video games. You know. In my understanding, it is, you know, you go from basically, you know, the Dungeons and Dragons board game to, you know, EverQuest, you know, Lord of the Rings Online, Elder Scrolls, you know, pretty much any sort of medieval, you know, swords and sorcery game, how it all started out. I mean, I don't know, I'm just thinking about the original Gauntlet. I don't know if that can be classed as an RPG, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, RPGs. One of my favourite series of games. I mean, there's just, you know, I think it's that and sort of sci-fi sort of stuff. And, you know, games like Mass Effect are pretty sweet because they do encompass both. But, yeah, I mean, I am, you know, so many decent RPGs. I mean, you know, I'd say Final Fantasy, great series from, I think, what, 3 to 10? Pretty good. 11 was good because it was the online one. 14 looks pretty good. I'm thinking about picking that up, but I'm not too sure at the moment. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, from what it seems, and listen to Limit Break Radio. It's, you know, it sounds like it will be really fun if I do sort of get round to playing it. But yeah, I mean, some of the ones I've played, you know, Dragon Quest VIII I thought was pretty good. That was on the, I think, PlayStation 2. It was, you know, the artist was the guy who draws for Dragon Ball, so that was pretty good. I mean, the main character that you play in that, you know, because with this is like, you know, it draws very much from. I'm not too sure. See if Dragon Quest draws from Final Fantasy or Final Fantasy draws from Dragon Quest, because there's a bit where you sort of like get your limit break or whatever, and with the main character who usually wears a headscarf, when he sort of uses his limit break, he sort of becomes like Goku, which, you know, is doubly funny because, considering, you know, as I said, the artist who drew the characters and all the monsters is the one who draws Dragon Ball, and basically the main character's hair spikes up, and he sort of changes color, and it is very sort of like an ode to Dragon Ball, but it is a really, really good game. And, you know, and one of the characters, the bandits, was voiced by Ricky Grover, who's a comedian over here. Very funny guy. But yeah, so Dragon Quest VIII, I mean, there's like two endings, which I think I got to. I mean, it's just one of those games, because there was so much to do in it, and it was like a really fun one. I mean, it was like, that's the thing, because all sort of these RPG roleplay games, sort of mass adventure sort of things, need some sort of fun element. I mean, you know, Final Fantasy VII, we had the Golden Saucer, and this one, there was like, I think it was a casino that you could go to, and I was like, constantly in there, just playing all the different games, having so much fun. It's like, you know, it's a game within a game, and it's a break from the quest and mission that you're on to complete. Which, you know, I say with the role play games, it's like, it makes me wonder if like, are these games designed to make us feel more like the hero? You know, whereas, you know, I mean, we play something like maybe like Gears of War. Yeah, what other stuff? I'm just trying to think now. You know, there's sort of first-person sort of Call of Duties, third-person sort of action-adventure games, those sort of stuff. You know, are we feeling less like the hero for them because we are a certain character, but we think maybe like games like sort of Fallout, you know, the basic Bethesda, Elder Scrolls, Mass Effect with BioWare. You know, we can create our own characters. We can be that person. Whereas, you know, that's the whole point. We are making ourselves into this game, or we are a set character. You know, it just makes me wonder if we're playing the role or we're making ourselves the role. But whatever. So that is the nature of role-playing games. It's like, yeah, we are the person playing that role. You know, whether we are playing that character, we're playing ourselves in the gaming world. But yeah, I mean, I just think about other games, because I've got a list here of like some of my favourite ones. But like Borderlands, I think I can consider as a role-play game. Yeah, definitely, because, you know, the loot drops and the items. And so that's another thing I'm looking forward to. And I say about sci-fi, role-play, Destiny. I can't wait for this game. It looks so much fun, and all the loot drops and all the videos I've seen and characters. I mean, you know, it'd be great if, I think my mate at work's hopefully going to get this if he actually gets around to watching the videos I tell him to watch. And maybe if Royce picks this up and whoever else has a PlayStation 4, whoever's getting on a PlayStation 4, because I know I'll be getting on a PlayStation 4. But yeah, I say, you know, Destiny is one of my, going to be one of the top of the games of the year this year. And I am really looking forward to the Game of the Year show this year, because, you know, several different games, some from last year, some from this year, several different platforms, you know, last generation consoles, new generation consoles. You know, it's going to be a good choice. So, you know, I say, as it's April now, you know, 4 months into the year, make sure you're getting your list compiled. I mean, I know I've got a list to set up somewhere on my computer and add some bits and pieces to it. But yeah, you know, work on that. But yeah, I say, the Elder Scrolls series, you know, Morrowind. I love Morrowind. I mean, you know, as I say, I talked about last week. I think it was last week I talked about it, about how the graphics change. Yeah, I think it was last week. The graphics change, but our view is the set with each console generation, whereas something when we first say, like, you know, on the N64, when there was nothing like what we have now, well, it was like, well, wow, these graphics of the N64, they're amazing. And then we move on to the PlayStation 1, and not PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, and it's like, well, wow, those graphics are amazing. And then you look back and it's not as good as the N64 isn't as good as you thought it was, because you're seeing better and better. When you look back on stuff, it doesn't have the same you know, the same feeling that you got from it. Which is basically, if you managed to hear through the shit you all heard last week, you know, that was what I was trying to get across. But, I mean, the Elder Scrolls, yeah, Morrowind. I mean, I love looking at the water. That was, you know, I sort of just stand by the lake and just watch all the water just flowing. It looked so realistic. It was amazing. It was like the best looking thing in the game. But yeah, I mean, I bought several copies of Morrowind. I mean, you know, the regular one, and it was like, there's a Game of the Year edition. So I was like messing around with that, and I became a werewolf, and, you know, just doing bits and pieces. I mean, I never actually followed the main story. I was just sort of, because, you know, it was the game before fast travel, which I'm so glad we have fast travel, because Morrowind was so big, and trying to get around it took ages and ages and ages. You know, there was no real... So that's the thing. It was one of the things with role-playing games when I first started. Defenders of Oasis, which I had on my Game Gear. When I, you know, this is... Hang on, 1995, 96, I was playing this game. I mean, I was late to the party when it comes to the consoles and handhelds. I mean, my first console was a Game Gear, which I think I got in 93. But yeah, say Defenders of Oasis was my very first role-play game. Very, very good. I'll talk about that. And so, but yeah, say it's when I was sort of that age, not really knowing the difference between the genres and what I had to do with the characters. I sort of went into a boss battle and just fought and fought. If I died and come back and sort of fight more, it was sort of not exactly trained in my brain what I had to do with the characters, but I knew I was getting stronger through more fights. And, you know, I was sort of scraping by with it through the edge of my teeth. But I mean, I know I can download, say, Defenders of Oasis onto my 3DS, but I'm not in a hurry to at the moment. But I mean, yeah. That was a really good game. But yeah, say Morrowind, really good. And then it evolved and got better with Oblivion, which I think is probably, I say, it's better than Skyrim because of the whole locale where it was, all the cities and towns and that sort of stuff. But I mean, you go to something like Skyrim, you've got, like, you know, the items that you can see, you can move them around the page, you know. look at them closely, you know, the detail that we got with Skyrim that's better than sort of the graphics that we got with Oblivion, and you know, and in Tune, better than what we got with Morrowind. As I say, as games evolve, we get better and better graphics, but consoles, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm trying to say. But yeah, I mean, you know, that same thing works with Fallout as well. I mean, Fallout was a great game for some. I'm dying to play a new Fallout game. This new one, supposedly set in Boston. I can't wait. You know, hopefully, you know, in a few months when E3 rolls around. I mean, we've just had GDC and that's showed off some bits and pieces, but nothing super spectacular. I mean, I'm looking forward to, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the, what do you call it, the trailer for the new Fallout. Whenever we get there, I mean, you know, like we did with Fallout 3, we got the trailer about a year before it was supposed to come out, but I can't wait, it's going to be good. But so, what else have I got on my list? Mass Effect, yes, so I'm a big sci-fi fan, you know, and roleplay, so Mass Effect was amazing, you know. I mean, the ending wasn't as good as I was hoping, but I was, you know, compared to everyone else, who was like, no, this didn't explain enough, what happens at the end, and there was all these posts on the internet about we want better from our game and all the choices you made, it meant to nothing. And it's like, you know, all the money they raised for new endings and every damn thing. But I mean, I was happy. I know I picked the choice that I wanted and I was happy with the choice that I made. But I mean, yeah, say E3, we'll probably find out about Mass Effect 4, what that adds to the story, if it's new characters and, you know, whatever we're going to find out, I'm looking forward to. I know I'll talk about it non-stop when we get to it. But yeah, I say Mass Effect, such a great series, you know, different characters. And I say, you know, I have a weakness for sort of romantic plot lines. So, you know, I think games like, you know, Final Fantasy, Mass Effect, you know, you could have sex with any of the characters on your crew, which was great. But yeah, I mean, you know, Liara will always have a firm place in my heart for my Commander Shepard. But yeah, I say, you know, it's such a good game. I mean, you know, I am tempted to pick it up and play it again. But as you know, we have the new console generation, and you know, the games that we're going to get that are coming out, I'm okay with playing the next game instead of going back. Well, I might. I don't know. I mean, I did that with Final Fantasy X, so, you know, I might. I don't know. It depends. What else? Oh, Front Mission 3. Now, this is probably a little-known title, which I don't think many people played. I think it was from Square Enix. Tactical RPG, one of my favourites, this is. Had, like, two different endings. It was all about these sort of customizable mechs. You had to follow the story. I can't remember too much what happened, but it was all about Japan and a sort of slightly set in the future, not, you know, hover cars and Back to the Future sort of thing, but it was like post-modern sort of thing, where, you know, wars going up all over the place, secret conspiracies. But yeah, I mean, you know, basically you were in these, control of these mechs, ones as they were called, and you would sort of put them around this map, certain locations to fight off enemies, and you'd have different weapons. It was a really, really good game. Really, really good. The story was amazing. And, you know, there was so much interaction as well. I mean, because you had your own little computer, and you could actually go on websites, like in-game websites, and solve puzzles and get items, and it was just a really, really good game. I mean, you know, go and watch some footage of it on YouTube. It was a really, really good one. You know, one I enjoyed quite thoroughly. Legend of Zelda, I think Link's Awakening was my first one on my Game Boy. You know, good, really, really good. I mean, I'm not too sure if we can class as such the recent Legend of Zeldas as role-play games, but mostly not as much as they used to be, to be honest. But, I mean, this new one that we got on the 3DS looks pretty much, you know, spot on. But it looks fun. I haven't really an interest in playing it. I might pick it up, but I'm not that bothered, to be honest, at the moment. But yeah, so other stuff, Pokemon, you know, whatever, you don't need to hear any more about that. But I mean, I did ask, this was the topic of the week, which I asked in the old Facebook group. Matty was happy with my choice. Is, you know, happy about, you know, talk about RPGs. And Mersh, you know, surprise for role-play games, he didn't say Grand Theft Auto. But he was talking about, you know, Final Fantasy. He says, Final Fantasy was the shit. He says, I also like playing Phantasy Star. Also like some of the lesser ones like Landstalker and some of the other odd Genesis ones as well. He says, does anyone remember Light Crusade? And I actually looked this up, and it actually looks like a pretty fun game. Yeah, it's sort of weird. I mean, I was watching some guy do a review of it, and he's like, well, yeah, you could attack some characters, but sometimes it was just, if there was like a group of them, it was easy to sort of run fast and sort of roll and lunge into them to knock them out and take down their health that way. He said that was easier. But yeah, I say Light Crusader does look like a lot of fun. Maybe we should get a sequel of that. I mean, you know, we got a sequel to Kid Icarus that came out, you know, decades ago. And it's also saying as well, he says that was the one of the that was one that should have been much better than it turned out. Also, he says he loved Shining Force. But yeah, I mentioned Defenders of Oasis. And Matt, he's also talked about the Mega Drive Classic Arcade, which has Phantasy Star 2 and 3. And I put a link to that in the Facebook group as well. But yeah, which, you know, has Shining Force, I think several of the Shining Force games. And now, you know, with Game Boy Advance stuff, you get, you know, so with 3DS, you get, you know, the backwards compatibility, the eShop, and you can buy some of the bits and pieces there. And, you know, backwards compatibility games that work on the, you know, 2D, DS games that work on a 3DS or 2DS. But yeah, I mean, tons of good, let's say, you know, it's one of everyone's favourite genres. I mean, you know, I say about, you know, my first experience was Defenders of Oasis. Now, this was basically a game where you play this prince of this kingdom. So I can't remember because it's been years since I played it. But you were the prince of this kingdom, and you were being attacked. And then I think you had to sort of leave, and you met up with these other your characters. There was one called Agmar, who was this thief, and then Salim, who was the son of a captain, like a ship's captain. And he gets killed, so he joins your party, and then you meet up. You get the genie, who becomes a playable character, and there's a princess that you rescue, and you know, it was a really good game. And you know, the last boss was pretty fun. I used these talismans, and they would like change different colors depending on how your character was at the moment. So it's like, if you're full health, I think it would go white, and it would do like massive destruction to the final boss. And yeah, it was just me playing that for a good while on my Game Gear. But yeah, so, you know, it was one of my first. I mean, you know, definitely not gonna be my last. I'm sorry, I do wonder about the future of role play games. I mean, now we have like what is it, like, you know, the MMOs, you know, I mean, yes, they've been going for about 10-15 years, but I mean, are they taking my worry for the MMOs that we are getting, are they taking stuff away from the games that we have? I mean, I think about stuff like Star Wars The Old Republic. I mean, I know I'm not putting my feelers out best to get information on that, but I don't really hear anyone raving about it. I mean, the last actual news article I heard about it is when it went, I think, free to play. I think that was it. I can't remember the last article. But yeah, they made a game that cost how many hundreds of million, $300 million to make, when you could have actually sort of made it as a proper, you know, RPG, like, you know, like Knights of the Old Republic was on the original Xbox. But it's like, well, you could have actually made a proper game of it and, you know, put it out there, and we would have eaten it up and sort of played through it and, you know, gone nuts. And we could have made, you know, could you imagine like a Knights of the Old Republic styles game with on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One? You know, they could have done so much more with it, but there's a need to make RPGs and, sorry, not RPGs, MMORPGs. It's like, they're not working as well as they should. I mean, you know, World of Warcraft, WoW, that's doing its bit at the moment, but I mean, that's not as popular as it used to be. I mean, yes, it's still got, you know, 7-8 million subscribers, yes, but, you know, it was at one time at 10 and 11, and so basically 3 million people have dropped off from playing it. It's a lot of people. I mean, you know, some of the PlayStation games that have come out. I was listening to one of the I think it was Liquor Bureau today, and they were talking about PlayStation All-Star Battle Royale, and that just made about $1 million, and was it $1 million? Yeah. Sold like a million copies. It's like, well, shit, that's not exactly super great, but you know, when it comes to sort of role play games, we want everyone to experience a story. It's like, well, make the story and then put it out. But I mean, if there's the whole reason with MMORPGs is that we want to play games together. Naturally, the whole point. But when it comes to stuff like Knights of the Old Republic, I don't want to play with other people. I just want to go through the story as my own character, as my own person. Which is why I was originally so worried about The Elder Scrolls. I was like, well, this game could be great, it could be shit. From what I'm hearing, it looks pretty good. People who are playing the beta and that seem to be enjoying it. I might pick it up, but I mean, it's a subscription-based game, and I'm already paying for Xbox Live. And I know I'm going to have to start paying for PlayStation Plus when I get my PlayStation 4. But it's like, well, why should I have to pay twice? Just make the game... See, that's the thing. See, other RPGs, other stuff I forgot to mention. Fable, a great game. First one, great. Fable 2, great. I mean, what was introduced in Fable 2 was the ability for co-op. It didn't really work too well, but it was there. And, there was like, if you turned on the social function, there was like different orbs buzzing around your world. That was, the other people. And you could click on those orbs and say, well, yeah, do you want to join my world or join theirs? And you could play together. I mean, there was no subscription. There was no fee. It's basically, and we could help each other. I mean, I remember when we talk about the whole thing with Fable 2, I was on GameFAQs or something. I was supposed to join some sort of clan. That clan lasted about 5 minutes before we all just thought, well, bugger it. There's no need for any of this stuff that we were planning. We just sort of did our own thing and basically went about our own business. But I mean, I got a load of people to my friends list, and basically, after a while, subsequently deleted them when trying to figure out why they were on there in the first place. But yeah, I mean, stuff like that. It's like there's no real need for a subscription. I mean, I go back to Dark Souls 2. That Demon Souls, Dark Souls 2, RPGs as well. I think with from the bloke I'm watching on YouTube. Him playing Dark Souls as well, he was had a boss fight, and he could call people to his world to help him fight the boss. I wish I could do it with my one. I'm having trouble. But yeah, I mean, there's stuff like that going on, and there's no real need to have an overly an overly connected game. I mean, I think about stuff like as well. Marvel Ultimate Alliance, it's a four-player co-op. That's perfectly fine, you play in it. Each person's their own little hero. And then you just go around the game as you would. I mean, there's nothing. The most you're going to need is about, four or five other people as well as yourself playing at one time. In a game, there's no real need. I mean, unless you make the bosses super hard like you do with Final Fantasy XI and 14. I'm not too sure what the bosses and sort of the monsters and mobs and stuff like with when it comes to like WoW and stuff. I mean, I'm guessing they're relatively hard or whatever. I mean, because you make alliances and big giant parties, it's like, well, you just make it so that everyone else can play. But I mean, that's my whole problem with the whole subscription stuff. It's like, well, you make it too big so that you've got to have more players, and it's understandable they're making money off of our playing this game, but I don't know. I mean, it just makes you wonder about the whole, the constant updates and what everything that's going on with everything. I don't know, but yeah, I say I mean, I do like MMORPGs. I mean, when I first started playing Final Fantasy XI, so much fun with it. I was like playing for like a couple of months straight, just like all day, as much as I could play out of the day, just in this world. Doing bits and pieces, fighting monsters. At the end of the day, I didn't really do much. It was sort of like Morrowind. I did bits and pieces, but never really accomplished anything. But yeah, I mean, I do worry about these titles, and you know what's becoming of them, and you know, I mean, Warhammer Online. I mean, you know, other bits and pieces. You know, Hellgate London, and that failed about, you know, 6-7 years ago. You know, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like all the signs are out there that these games are failing. I mean, was it Champions Online? I mean, I think Star Trek Online, Star Wars: The Old Republic. All these games come out and then go free to play, and then eventually all the servers get taken down. And it's like, well, what was the point? I mean, sure, so I don't really know anyone who's talking about Star Trek Online. I mean, EVE Online, I don't really have anything to do with it, but I mean, I've seen lots of bits and pieces going on at the moment for it. That's still, you know, doing well as a, you know, sci-fi spreadsheet. But yeah, I mean, it's just, we don't want to play, I mean, we all love playing RPGs, but there's no need to make them so massively multiplayer. It's like, just have like 3 or 4 people, as well as yourself, as, you know, co-op, and then just go into it and have fun. That's the whole thing. It's like, yeah, if you take away having to worry about this over-expansive world, that's what I'm saying. You do something sort of like what Mass Effect does with passing on the story, the save files. So, like, you know, you pass down all the stuff your character did in Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2, and then Mass Effect 2 to 3. But, you know, you do something like that with, you know, sort of like, you know, like as Ratchet and Clank does with its previous games. But have it with, you know, do, I don't know, Fantasy Adventure 1, and then you basically is like, you know, 4 or 6 player co-op, and you're all going around and you fight the final monster, and then basically you cap out your characters level at whatever it was, and then, you know, Fantasy Adventure 2 comes out, and then you just sort of swap the data, send the data across, so you still keep your characters and you can still have fun. I mean, just if you make the game good enough, it's fun in itself. There's no real, you know, I mean, I actually like the sound of that, to be honest, and it would be nice. I mean, they're supposed to be doing that, I think, with Destiny, which actually makes me kind of happy. But yeah, I mean, I want stuff like that. It's an ingenious idea. I don't know, because I'm a genius. But no, I mean, it would work better if they did something like that. You know, have it, you know, pass the information on that you have from game to game. Just keep making the games, keep making them fun, enjoyable. The graphics nice and pretty. The story needs to grab you. It needs to do something for you, otherwise you won't want to keep playing it. But you need, you know, as developers and publishers and story writers and all that sort of stuff, you need to pull your finger out your ass and make something that we want to play, not the usual bullshit which comes out and it's played once and then forgotten about. You know, something with depth to it, which, you know, half the shit I always talk about on this show. But yeah, I mean, you know, come the day when, so this is why I am so excited about this current console generation. It's like, I'm looking forward to Destiny. I'm looking forward to the new Fallout, and whatever, roleplay games that we do get, for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. Cause I mean, you know, I'm buying the PlayStation 4 in a couple of months. I've got some other bits and other bits and pieces that I want to buy. Like, I need new trainers and a laptop so I can write my book on something other than pens and paper. But I mean, I would like to get myself an Xbox One, so I do have, you know, both consoles. But yeah, I mean, you know, come the day and we'll see what we get. I mean, I'd love to do what I am doing now and sort of look back at this past generation, console generation, and marvel at the games like Assassin's Creed and, you know, what the hell is it? Oblivion, Skyrim, GTA 4, GTA 5, those sort of games, Mass Effect, and think, well, great. What's this new current generation got for us that we're going to want to play? What am I going to be playing on the future tech stuff? And, you know, what are we going to see when it all does come together? And it does, it does make me excited. It really, really does. But I say, I'm going to take a break now because I've been talking for an hour and I need a drink because my throat is pretty dry. But I say, I'll be back in about 8 minutes or so with your old news and bits and pieces. So stay tuned and keep listening. And I will be back after these messages.
Damn. combination of
stations. And Ashley, you're from England, so we're not really sure what asshole number you would be. We just know it would be at least two extra numbers and one extra dash.
Yeah,
that's all we know
sign.
For sure. Yeah. It's a sort of country code.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to have a go.
If you'd like to Skype in, it's Antisocial Gamer Radio. All one word.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
Now I'm realizing that this is all going to be on fucking podcast. Oh, boy.
I told you. Yeah, I was trying to warn you the whole time.
Dude, I don't care. I'm voluntarily Skyping into you. Use this to make a promo. I don't care. No. Mm-hmm. Dude, like I said, my fiance doesn't listen. Dutch got drunk one night. Well, he gets drunk every night. But he got drunk one night, and I used it as a promo. Why not? Use this into a promo. I give everyone permission to turn this audio into a promo. I don't care.
He also used drunk me for a promo, too, if you remember.
Yeah. JJ, you play it every week.
I do. Folks at home, Radio Gold like this happens every Sunday and Thursday at midnight on 360 on 420, only on MoreLikeRadio.com.
Hey, smokers, you stink worse than a dumpster. Stop living in the Middle Ages and try an electronic cigarette today by Smokeless Image. Just go to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. They're cheaper than regular cigarettes, don't smell, and come in a variety of flavors like fruit, mint, and traditional tobacco flavors. Order your new electronic cigarettes from Smokeless Image today by going to tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke. That's tinyurl.com/MLRsmoke.
If you're sick and tired of getting pro wrestling only after it's gone through the PG filter, then it's time you were introduced to Combat Zone Wrestling. Celebrating 15 years of ultra violence, Combat Zone Wrestling will give you all the high stakes, high flying, and hard hitting pro wrestling you can handle. Check out their live event schedule, get information on their next iPay-per-view, skim the roster, or shop for CZW merch right now at CZWrestling.com. That's CZWrestling.com. No dance segments, no endless talk of downloading apps, just wrestling. Combat Zone Wrestling, the ultra violent underground.
Talk Radio Meltdown.
He just wrote a song, put it on an album. The album came out, went to number one, and a few weeks later, he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm gay, and if you want to know why, listen to this particular track.
Oh,
everyone did, and they found out. It's like, oh, the song's apparently about how much he wants to fuck a dude. Okay. That's logical.
Well, with the verse like, I want a dick up my ass repeatedly with balls touching my bum.
Is that really the lyric? I'm not familiar with this band.
Talk Radio Meltdown every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on MoreLikeRadio.com.
What kind of store only has one thing on the shelf? T-Fury does. Now before you complain, listen to how it works. Each day a brand new t-shirt design becomes available for only 24 hours, then it's replaced by a new design the following day. They're all submitted by freelance artists too, so they're completely unique. They come in multiple colors and sizes, and they're all inspired by nerd and geek culture. And for only $11 per shirt, you can't go wrong. Check out today's limited edition design right now at tinyurl.com/MLRTs. Bookmark it and check back daily for new designs at tinyurl.com/MLRTEES.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com, and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh, no. When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus, a free extra gift so sensual, we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So check out adamandeve.com today for this special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type DEAL48 for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use offer code DEAL48. At AdamandEve.com.
you weren't able to catch the last Hippo Juice show, here's what you probably missed.
The credibility that they are using as a bouncer at a Colombian strip club. Credibility.
Oh my god, that's hilarious! Let's say it three more times.
Bounce, down, down, down. Oh god, to save you, gotta save my soul. Wow, down, bow, down, wow, diddy, wow, down, wow.
Listen to the Hippo Juice Show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. on morelikeradio.com.
Tonight at 10, it's a tale of lust, seduction, and murder on Sexy Betrayals. Then at 7, some like their murder with a side of sexy biscuits on Southern Fried Homicide. But now, get ready for Lust, Betrayal, and Murder on Hot Load Case Files.
Oh, yeah. Three of the best shows in a row.
Is the lube over there?
Yeah, I got lube right here.
Well, get over here, big guy.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah, hi. We aren't getting our informative murder porn. No, none of our channels that have informative murder porn appear to be working. Yeah, the screen just says, how do you tame a horse in Minecraft? Yes, we do have children. A what? A parental lock? Stan! How do you tame a horse in Minecraft?
What?
What is Minecraft and how do you tame a horse in it?
You guys don't need to be watching that stuff.
Oh, come on! You can't block your parents from watching informative murder porn! What, you think if we watch shows about married people killing each other all the time, we're gonna go out and do it? That's stupid! I'm not gonna go out and kill your mom just because I watch Investigative Discovery, Stan. It'd be impossible to clear away all the DNA evidence anyway. Even if I hired someone else to kill her, I'd have to kill that person too, because 96% of the time, that person eventually tells the truth. I've thought this through a lot. Stan, you're a lousy kid. I wish Jaden Smith was my son.
And welcome back to the second hour of Antisocial Game Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. Thanks for everyone tuning in the chat room tonight. I love that rejoiner. Thanks a lot, Matt. That really makes me laugh every damn time. I'll use my other ones next week. But yeah, I say news time. There's a bits and pieces going on. I'm trying to remember what I talked about last week because, you know, bits and pieces, trying to delete that and get rid of this and all that sort of stuff. But I saw this, I got this off Games Radar. What AAA games can learn from 6 months' Watch Dogs delay? Now, this is quite funny, like, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Watch Dogs is the game I'm looking forward to. And there's a new sort of Watch Dogs sort of Life in Chicago trailer, which I'm going to post in the old Facebook group as soon as I've finished entertaining the masses. But yeah, I say I can't wait to play Watch Dogs. It's you know, it's sort of Grand Theft Auto, but with sort of Grand Theft Auto meets Ghost in the Shell, sort of. I'll talk about the article. Watch Dogs was originally due to be a launch title for next gen, but Ubisoft delayed the game last October. The reasons given revolved around a need to polish the final game to make it a much better experience. So I'll just move the microphone so I can see the page better. All very applause worthy. A recent story by CVG explains that the delay allowed the team at UB Montreal to include gameplay elements and systems that would otherwise been cut and added to a hypothetical sequel, or probably a Game of the Year edition. It's worded to make this delay seem like a luxury, but I'd argue it was a necessity. The whole story perfectly sums up the advantages and drawbacks of modern AAA game development. On the one hand, it's great that Ubisoft took the time to make Watch Dogs all it could be. While players will undoubtedly benefit from this, we shouldn't be fooled into thinking it's an act of benevolence from the publisher. With the gap between success and failure now vaster than ever, new video games need to be given every possible chance. Every possible chance to succeed financially and spark enough play interest to create demand for a sequel. releasing a half-baked Watch Dogs wasn't an option for Ubisoft, so the cost of a six-month delay vastly outweighs the cost of a brand-new franchise following the start of a fresh console generation. See, now, this is what I've always talked about. I've always said, if you're going to make a game, make it. I mean, you know, this is Bethesda. You ask Bethesda, and they'll tell you, you know, when's this, what's ever coming out, and they say, when it's ready, which is the only answer that any publisher, developer should actually answer. It's like, well, when's the game coming out? When it's ready. Don't start bullshitting. I mean, I know Bethesda, but the old, was it 11-11-11 when Skyrim came out? And I know Kojima does his old time clock bullshit. But it's literally, don't put out times and download, you know, dates that when the game's going to be out unless you know it's going to be ready. Take as much time as you need, because literally we don't want to play, as it says here in the article, half-baked games. We want them to be proper and perfect and bug-free. You know, I think about games like Fallout New Vegas, which I know Jack from Talk Radio Meltdown is playing at the moment, which, from what I've been hearing from him, it's still buggy as fuck. But yeah, it's like, don't put anything out unless you literally you're perfectly happy with it. You know there's no more bugs, because literally we don't want to play stuff. I mean, I don't mind doing second playthrough for games because if I want to do something differently, but I don't want to do a second playthrough of a game because basically it's crashed on me and deleted my save, like Test Drive Unlimited 2, which was a great game. You know, I mean, apart from the whole needing driver's licenses to drive certain cars into certain races, which I had to get my mate from work to do. And basically, I got so far into the game, and then, because it was buggy as hell, it corrupted, and I lost my save, and I'm like, well, shit, I can't do what I did, because I changed consoles and used it on my brand new Xbox, and couldn't have access to whatever I had access to. So I was like, well, bugger it. It's like, you know, get rid of the game. But yeah, never, if you need more time to make your game better, then take the time. I mean, because, you know, we're not going to want to put money into a game, because, you know, most people listen to reviews. I sort of sit on the fence when it comes to reviews. I, you know, I'll watch them, I'll have a listen, I'll go on YouTube, I'll look at videos, I will search the high and low for people's opinions and then make a judgment on what I've heard from people, which is, you know, how we look at reviews anyway. But when a game is basically not all it's supposed to be and people are saying this, no one's going to buy it. But if you're going to lose sales. But if you actually take the time, put some extra effort into it, and make it what it's supposed to be, then, you know, it's going to be great. The game's going to be worth playing, and we're going to want to play it. But if you're sloppy with it, then, you know, it's on your back. But yeah. I'll carry on with the article. On the other hand, it shows a worrying reliance on the notion of creating sequels. The fact that Ubisoft considered holding ideas back while sensible could be construed as a lack of ambition. I must have talked about this on one of the earlier shows, you know, a year or so ago back when I first started, about how Ubisoft was like, well, we don't want to make games for this stuff. We want new hardware. It was like, well, that's it. It wasn't really a lack of ambition. It's like they had the ambition. It's just the lack of console. It's the lack of new technology and the ability for them to push themselves further than, you know, because Watch Dogs is a Ubisoft game. They want to push themselves, and they are more than happy to push the workers and themselves to make the best game that we can possibly play. Because they want, at the end of the year, they want the Game of the Year awards. They want all these bullshit awards. I mean, fuck all. They want, you know, the E3 game of the show, and GDC credits. They want the full kit and caboodle. They want everything. They want all the pats on the backs, the big standing ovations. And to be honest, if they make the game perfect the first time, then they fucking deserve it. You give it to them. I mean, you know, Ubisoft. I mean, you know, last year my game of the year was Assassin's Creed 4. I think it was. Yes, it was. And I got onto Ubisoft and I said, thank you for your game. It was my game of the year. They said thanks. Actually, you know, tweeted back to me, said thanks, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, great. You know, they appreciate people appreciating the stuff they do. you know, it's like I said last week about do the publishers actually appreciate us? You know, Codemasters got back to me and they said, yeah, we do. And I got back to them and said, yeah, I just watched like the Ultimate Sidemen. They were doing a mission on Trials Evolution. And there was someone who had done a creative level, micro machine style level, which was actually really, really fun to watch. And it's like, well, yeah, people still appreciate your games 20 years after the last one came out, you know. So where was I? If there's an acceptance that a sequel will happen, it could mean that the best concept are spread over several games, leading to the kind of sequel fatigue we've seen in franchises like Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed. See, Assassin's Creed, I can agree slightly, but I still will buy the new Assassin's Creed when it comes out because I like Assassin's Creed. I don't, you know, I know it's pretty much the rinse and repeat sort of stuff, but it's still fun to me. I still enjoy playing it. I still enjoy running around, jumping up and down over buildings, even though you're walking across that rope that has this little bits of wood in the middle that look exactly like they've been in the past several Assassin's Creed games. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's still fun. I mean, Call of Duty. It's the same. But the thing is, though, I mean, they can say that with sequel fatigue, but to be honest, with games like Call of Duty, it's genre fatigue. It's like, you know, every shooter's the same, which is, you know, why, I mean, I haven't played this, and it's, you know, I mean, I know JJ Stoner, he's played the shit out of it. Titanfall, you know, from what videos I've seen, from what I've heard from people, you know, it's something new, and it looks like something new. It's not the standard Call of Duty, it's something more, which, to be honest, it actually does make me laugh thinking the fact that, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Treyarch. I hate them, to be honest. But I mean, the only thing I did like about Call of Duty 3 was the multiplayer. You know, there was vehicles and guns and all sorts of tanks, and it's like one of the best fun experiences I've had with a multiplayer game. You know, barring on Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, which was basically done by the people who make Titanfall. Originally, and then they all buggered off with the EA lawsuits and all that sort of shit. But yeah, I mean, I'll keep going. If ideas keep getting banked for later, there's less chance of these concepts feeling genuinely fresh and innovative by the time a sequel rolls around. But the thing is, though, from what they say there, it's nice that you want to spread your ideas out, but it does, yeah, I say, you're not spreading yourself too thin, but the thing is, there might be something good about putting all your eggs in one basket. I don't know how many analogies I can come up with. But the thing is, though, if you come up with several different things and you thought, well, we'll do this in this game and that in that game and that in that game, you keep changing stuff as the game goes on, as the game's, you know, sequel after sequel after sequel. But it's like, well, if you put it all in one game, then you can... See, that makes you wonder now. If they did stuff like that, would it still be appreciated later on in the sequels? I mean, would they have to change it or tweak it? But maybe that's why they do it, to be honest. You know, have, you know, things differently throughout games. I mean, they've pretty much taken out the, say about Assassin's Creed. The eavesdropping, I think we used it in the first Assassin's Creed a little bit. I think we might have used it once or twice in, I think we still use it in various Assassin's Creed games, but it's not what it was supposed to be from the first one. It was like, well, you had to, in the first Assassin's Creed, you had to find your target, you'd have to do some eavesdropping, listen to what's going on, and then hunt your target down that way. Whereas, you know, gameplay evolves, and maybe they're worried that, you know, if they evolve the gameplay too quickly, then we wouldn't get... It would get stagnant too quickly, and then we would end up with sequel fatigue, where it was pretty much the same thing over and over and over again. But then that would be down to the developers, the writers, to basically spice up what we were playing, what we were enjoying, what the gameplay, whereas or the writing, or you know, just do that. But I say I'll go back to the article. That's potentially as damaging as releasing a game that isn't quite up to scratch from the get-go. Given that Watch Dogs is a cross-generation release, I'd expect Ubisoft to be aiming much, much higher with a Watch Dogs sequel. since the developer won't need to consider consoles with less power or future for future projects, it should prove liberating. But yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I've got an article, I think, somewhere here about saying that Titanfall 2 won't be a Xbox exclusive. It will be multiple consoles, which, you know, you can understand, to be honest, considering that the fact that Respawn Studios is basically all the good developers from Infinity Ward basically make their own thing, and they basically, well, what they did, what they could do, they made Titanfall, which is being, you know, being hailed as the reason to buy an Xbox One, which, you know, it's my reason to buy an Xbox One as well as Dead Rising and other bits and pieces, but just not at the moment. So I'll carry on. The net result of all this extra pressure on developers who essentially need to get things right first time will likely manifest in either one or two ways during the next this new generation. We'll likely see more substantial last-minute delays as publishers refuse to release games that aren't given the best chance to succeed. Hang on, let me read that again. We'll likely see more substantial last-minute delays as publisher refuse to release the games. Yeah, no, it's not. They can overlook that. They can overlook that. But it's not, you don't delay it. You just, as I said, you don't tell people when the fucking game's coming out. You finish it. You need to make it when it's done. You don't need to rush something. Maybe I should do some spamming on this article to various developers and get them to open their eyes. But yeah, there's no need to give us a release date. Just, you know, when it's ready, it's ready. This is my whole thing. This revolves around, you know, I talk about like the shows and conventions, the expos. There's no need for any of these things. They're all running on a release date. If they want to get trailers and demos out for these shows, for E3, for Tokyo Game Show, for Eurogamer, for Comic Cons, for every damn thing. It's like, well, there's no real need because it's the download age. I mean, there's a Pokemon event going live, I think, across Europe this Friday. And it's like, I have to go to the actual shop and download it there. I can't download it off my 3DS, like, through the internet for some reason. It's like, it's this the digital age. We don't need to go to the shop. I mean, you know, I'm not exactly against downloading games only. I mean, you know, I bought Pokemon Trose. It's like, yeah, I downloaded it. I probably wouldn't have had to go out to the store because it's a download game. But I don't need to go to some place just to download something for whatever reason. And, well, we'll see how that goes with that. But I'm going to say, you know, I don't know, where was I? The alternative is timescale. Yeah, timescales, yeah. Create more realistic timescales. Yeah, sorry. The alternative is to announce late. When games are largely frequent feature complete, to create more realistic timescales for developers and rein in any grand expectations. The drawback here is that you lose time to hype up the game, which is basically whole expos. Which is why companies should do their own press days. You know, Nintendo doesn't really do much of the E3 stuff there. You know, I think it was Nintendo or Rockstar. I think it's Rockstar. But I mean, half these companies have their own sort of press day. Then have a press day for the company. You know, get a bunch of you know, the writers from, like, you know, Kotaku, IGN, Giant Bomb, GameSpot. Get all these people down. You know, come and have a look. And if your company listens to this in the UK, you can email me at antisocialgamered@yahoo.co.uk. And I would love to come to any of the places that you have in the UK, studios, especially Rockstar up in Scotland. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You don't have to do this. It's the digital age. You know, there's more. Seriously, people, you need to get to my train of thought because you're wasting your money on this sort of stuff. I mean, because Ubisoft said they're not making a Watch Dogs demo. I mean, it's like, how the hell can you do a demo of an open world game? I mean, I know, I think, what do you call it? Crackdown did it back in the day. But, I mean, we didn't get anything for Grand Theft Auto. But, you know, I mean, they're open world games are very tricky to do demos for. Which part of the city do you open up and which do you leave, you know, barren and And making a demo is a whole bunch of other production as well. It's like, you know, it's not worth the money making demos for stuff like this when it's, you know, you're better off just putting into your time and the money into the other employees. But yeah, so the drawback here is that you lose time to hype up the game. Realistically, I think we'll see a mixture of both. If everything goes the way I hope, there'll be fewer AAA games to sift through, and each one will benefit from an increase in quality. Now, see, whole AAA games, I'm not exactly what that means, to be honest. I know that's, you know, before my part. But it's like perfect or whatever games, you know. But the thing is, though, if everyone takes their time and puts more effort into their games and doesn't give some sort of random release date, which they'll think they'll meet and end up delaying, it's like, well, all your games should be pretty much AAA, you know. Because, I mean, just the cost of the game, the amount of money it costs to make these games these days, it's going to cost more and more money. Developers are going to sort of fall by the wayside. They'll all basically be like, like American football or football over here. It's like they'll be the big teams, you know, they'll be the top six, whatever. Developers, you know, Ubisoft, Activision, I don't know, Sega, whatever the hell Nintendo's doing, you know, that sort of stuff. THQ's disappeared. Stuff like that. You know, you give us the, time and effort that you want to put into it and put it into it, you know, and just make it when it's ready, like Bethesda does. And, you know, you will have AAA games and, you know, we'll see how it goes. Plus, once the developers are familiar with the new hardware, the focus on polish should also mean fewer bugs at launch and less patches to correct. Errors, yeah, I'm looking at Battlefield. Yeah, that's all manners of fucked up. So while this has been a painful lesson for Ubisoft to learn with Watch Dogs, it's encouraging to see the focus being firmly fixed on quality. Quite simply, it doesn't. If a game doesn't meet AAA standards, then no publisher, no matter how cash rich, will be content to put out a AAA budget failure. I guess that's probably why people are paying so much for a game like Titanfall, when basically it is just multiplayer only. Which, you know, I don't have a problem with, to be honest. It's, you know, it looks fun from what I've been hearing. Let's try and find something. News article. Here we go. Don't know what that. Here we go. Yes. Now, we seem to be getting a few of these. I know we've got half an hour left in the show, so I talked so much about that last article. It was a good article, actually. And, you know, that was from Games Radar. And, you know, I do enjoy getting their articles. But, yeah, this is from CVG. Retailer lists The Last of Us Complete Edition for PlayStation 4. Product reportedly set for release on Sony's next-gen console in June. Spanish retailer Extra Life is carrying an online listing for The Last of Us Complete Edition for PlayStation 4. While Sony has yet to officially announce a PlayStation 4 edition of Naughty Dog's PlayStation 3 title, quotes attributed to a Turkish PlayStation spokesperson last week suggested a next-gen version of the game is being readied for release this summer or winter in Australia. Extra Life listing carries the Last of Us Complete Edition release of June 19th. The advertised product also comes with a collectible bag for about €64.95. It makes no specific mention of whether the Last of Us DLC is included, although the Complete Edition name suggests it may be. Well, if it doesn't, what the hell does it complete? What else is there included in it if it's not a Complete Edition with the DLC? We've contacted Sony's European arm for clarification about a potential PlayStation 4 version of the game. According to Sony, Last of Us sold more than 4 million copies between its release on June 2014 and July 3rd last year, making its fastest selling new franchise in PlayStation 3 history, and at the time the console's quickest selling game of 2013. In mid-March, Sony said that The Last of Us US sales had cleared over 6 million units. Naughty Dog creator director Druckmann recently said there's a 50-50 chance that a Last of Us sequel will be developed. Now, it'll probably be just, you know, if they want to, but I'm sure I'm not sure that I'd want one. I mean, you know, if there is, I will buy it straight away, because if you haven't played The Last of Us and you have a PlayStation 3, get it. The game is amazing. And if you have a PlayStation 4 and this does come out, pick it up when it comes out. But I mean, just The Last of Us Complete Edition, I'm not too fussed. You know, if it does come out with all the DLC, whatever. I mean, I'm not sure I'd pick it up and play it again. I might. But I mean, you know, they've done this with Tomb Raider, and if I can find the if I can click on the right bloody link, if I can find the right bit article that I'm looking for, there's supposed to be one for Metro Last Light as well. They're doing like where is it? I don't think I have it, but no, they're supposed to be doing some sort of what the hell is it? They're supposed to be doing some sort of HD button thing for like the original Metro Last Light, Metro 2033, and Metro Last Light for the newer consoles, you know, for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, which I wouldn't mind. I'd pick up because I'm a big fan of Metro Last Light and Metro 2033. Really good games. Which, if you're a big fan of the post-apocalyptic wasteland sort of games, I'd say pick it up. It's a must. I mean, I've read half the book. I mean, it's I'm just looking at it now. It's still sitting on my shelf. I need to finish off reading it. But yeah, I mean, it'd be good when it does come out. Let's see what we got here. Trying to find something to not finish off the end of the show. Here we go. Yeah. As I talked about Final Fantasy, this is from CVG. Square Enix will focus more heavily on JRPG's core audiences. Firm's president says global projects can lose focus. Square Enix will focus more heavily on JRPGs after global titles missed the mark and niche titles surprised. The company's president, Yosuke Matsuda told Nikkei Trendy, translated by Siliconera, that Square's games built for global audiences often lost their focus. If you focus too much on the global aspect, you might lose sight of who you're actually making the game for, Matsuda said. Using Hitman Absolution's mainstream concessions as an example. I'm scrolling down the page. As for the AAA's titles we're currently developing for series, we basically want to go back to their roots and focus on the core audiences. While working hard on content that can have fans say things like "This is the Hitman we know," Matsuda said. Matsuda said, "He says I believe that this is the best way for our development." For our development studios to display their strengths. Square Enix's new direction was inspired in part by the international success of Bravely Default, the title co-developed with Silicon Studios. Was made as a JRPG without compromises, which ended up increasing its international appeal in the long run, according to Matsuda. With that in mind, this is what he says, and all of the collective fans is a sense of mass which loses image of a niche market. For the new games we'll be developing from this point on, while this may sound a bit extreme, we've been talking about making them as heavily JRPG. I believe that that way we can better focus on our targets, which will also bring better results. Which, to be honest, actually sounds pretty good to me. Because, I mean, I think that with what we've got I'm trying to make it more Western, like, I think that explained why Final Fantasy failed so much. Final Fantasy 13 failed so badly because they tried to sort of make Westernize it, and you made, you know, one shitty sequel after another. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, if it's not broke, don't fix it, and go with what you know. And as I said, Final Fantasy X HD remastered. It's the same game, just HD and remastered. But it's like that's what you should be doing. I want to play a game where I'm the hero There's a romantic element, which is always what sort of does it for me. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's big and it's flashy, but it's not overly complicated. Like, you know, the whole battle system we got with 13, it was so fucking shit. But, yeah, it's like, just make it like what it used to be. I mean, that's the thing, you know, there's no need to remake the wheel. And, you know, with the cars at Square Enix, they're trying to make them fly when all they need to do is make them drive along the ground. But let's find something else. I mean, trust, that makes me feel really happy if Square does want to, you know, go back to their roots, as it would be. This article's from Games Radar. Why Facebook's $2 billion purchase of Oculus VR is a good thing. As some of you know, I think on the other shows, I think Rage Quit Radio, they were talking about the Oculus Rift. But yeah, Facebook bought it out for $2 billion. Zuckerberg, you've done it again. And news broke today that Facebook has just acquired Oculus Rift. This is from like about a week ago. The tech company behind the ever-advancing Oculus Rift headsets. The knee-jerk reaction you're probably experiencing right now is a bewilderment at the Facebook's $2 billion investment into such a gaming-oriented product. Turns out Facebook plans on expanding it past its original purchase, but don't worry, as of this moment, Oculus Rift will be made for gamers first and classrooms second. See, I'm not too fussed about the Oculus Rift. I mean, it's great for what it does for the people who can use it, but you know, I wear glasses. I can't go to see 3D movies because it gives me a headache. I can't use the 3D on my 3DS because it gives me a headache. I mean, it's nice, you know, whatever. But as I always said, if you want to make something that's got, you know, more depth, why don't you just make deeper stories and, you know, better characters? You know, work on the software, not the physical hardware. All right, I'll go to the side. Mobile. Jesus Christ, I'm turning into an American. Mobile is the first, is the platform of today. Now we're also getting ready for the platforms of tomorrow, said Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Oculus has the chance to create the most social platform ever and change the way we play and communicate. In plain English, VR may be the next steps in how we interface with one another, which depends on how you look at it, could be a welcome advancement past staring at your smartphone 24/7. Well, the thing is, I don't have a smartphone anymore because it was breaking and costing me too much money, so I've gone for a standard sort of Star Trek flip phone, and it does me just fine. Facebook being a company driven by virtual but still social interactions, it makes sense that it doubled down on the current front runner in virtual reality. Don't know. But none can deny the usages for VR beyond fully immersed gaming. Zuckerberg cites the possibility of enjoying a courtside seat at a game, studying in a classroom of students and teaching all over the world. Then you get your ass on a plane and you go there. And if you want courtside seats, then you save up the money and you buy courtside seats. Or consulting with a doctor face-to-face just by putting on goggles in your home. Now, this actually reminds me, there's a Two Ronnies sketch, which I'm going to chuck in the Facebook group later, which is basically, you know, you'll understand when you see it, talk about this whole face-to-face VR bullshit. When you think about long-term potential for the VR and the Rift, I'll have to put it out to various writing organisations as well, and see what they think. Should it take off? Cool video games seem like a baby step towards an adulthood in a virtually interconnected world. Yeah, it's called PlayStation Home, and people don't like PlayStation Home. If Facebook has become a cornerstone of wearable computer like Google Glass, which, let's face it, is inevitable, Oculus Rift could be the first perfect test chamber for what those applications might look like when Games Radar, Holland Cooper chatted with Oculus VR CEO Palmer Luckey at PAX Prime in 2013. Luckey mentioned that many companies were using Rift as a proving ground for technology that may still be decades away. You know, there's more on this article, but to be honest, it's going to go on and on, and I'm not that fussed. I mean, I am actually excited to see what they do with it. But I mean, to be honest, I mean, the article, they've got like pictures of like from Johnny Mnemonic, and I think about, you know, the sort of the sex scene with what the hell was it? Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone and Sandra Bullock when she was attractive. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, VR's nice. I mean, yes, it was done years ago and the technology wasn't right and it was laughed at. But I mean, do we really want the whole... I don't know. I mean, now I'm thinking about Hackers as well. There was a bit, you know, Hackers, great movie, should have won an Oscar. There's a bit in that where the bad guy is wearing a headset and using a controller in his hand and fighting someone like, you know, like that. It's like, well, this stuff's been around for years, and the talk about it and the actions that we're getting, and it's like, well, it's just. I don't know. I'm expecting goodish things, but I don't think it's going to pan out. I mean, it's nice that they want to do stuff like this, but I don't know. You remember the whole mobile phones came out, it was all about radiation. Now we have to wear computers on our heads with all the heat, the stuff's kicking off. And it's like, well, what games are we going to want to wear, like, be virtual with? I mean, I know they talk about stuff with, like, Skyrim did a bit. I just don't see the point. To be honest, when, you know, Kinect, I don't see the point in that either. I'm more than happy to. I mean, yes, I can understand that the VR stuff makes it more immersive, which is nice. But maybe I'm just sort of. Maybe I just won't be able to feel the full benefits of the actual VR because I can't wear it because of my glasses. But it's just, I just don't see the point. And $2 billion, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of money to put into something that could basically flop. You know, it's sort of like EA with fucking the Old Republic. But yeah, I mean, you know, if it works, great. But I mean, yes, it's nice that all the future technology and stuff is happening, but it just makes me feel not left out, but it feels like stuff is being left behind, stuff's being moved forward with the technology wise. It's like, you know, I'll be honest, it'll push the Kinect stuff out the way, and you know, and bring forth the VR stuff. But it's, well. What's the VR stuff going to do for us who don't wear who wear glasses like I do, but I don't know, it's still too early to tell when this stuff is years away. And just as I say, it's all right to have the technology, right? Not exactly Dr. Ian Malcolm. It's sort of, you know, what you make it where we should. It's what are you going to put on it? I mean, the PlayStation Vita, back, you know, before I started doing this show. I listened to other shows and they had PS Vitas. And it's like, yeah, with the touchpad on the back, it's like, people was trying to find what the use is for it. It's like, it's nice that you make the technology, but you've got to put stuff on it. And the fact that we're getting games these days that are still buggy as hell, I think about, you know, as I've mentioned earlier in the show, Fallout New Vegas, very buggy. I mean, the copy of Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic that I had on the Xbox, that was buggy, and, you know, say, Fallout New Vegas and Knights of the Old Republic 2 was made by Obsidian, and that was buggy as hell as well. But I say you've got to have the games to play on it and a reason to want to use it. I mean, I'm more happy for augmented reality rather than actual virtual reality. Because, I mean, as much as I didn't really like it and how useless it was, that Eye of Judgment game for the PlayStation 3 that worked with a camera, I mean, it was completely crap and no one played it. But, I mean, I did like the fact that I put a card down and the camera would read it. And it was like, you know, there was a little monster appear and I could sort of, you know, poke at, like, the monster through, like, you know, through the camera and look at it on the screen. And it was like it would interact, you know, like The Pokemon game I have on my on my 3DS, the Poké Radar, how that, you know, how that works. But I don't know. Time will tell, and we'll see what happens when we get closer to the release of this thing and how much it's going to cost. And, I mean, Charles, you put $2 billion in it. This thing, when it does eventually come out, is going to cost a whole shit ton of money, to be honest. All right, let's try and see something first. I mean, there's a couple of articles. I mean, I've got a few minutes left with the show. Oh, this is a nice short one. I don't think I talked about this last week. Far Cry 4, there we go, set in Himalayas with rideable elephants, coming in the first half of 2015. This is from IGN. Far Cry 4 will be set, Eurogamer reports sources have confirmed the new locale, which makes a shift from the sandy tropical locations we're used to. The aim is to apparently release the game before the end of March in 2015, with an optional release, official release expected at E3 in June. PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC versions are are coming out. though some confusion remains whether or not we should expect to see the title on the PlayStation 3 or 360. Maybe, whatever. But yeah, I mean, just, I look forward to playing it. It's going to be fun, you know. It's Far Cry. I mean, you know, if the story is as good as the last one was, and it's going to be as, you know, as interactive as the last one was, then I am all for it. I'm happy to play another Far Cry game. I'll end the show with this. This is from Games Radar, one of those poll list things. The 8 most pointless victories in video games. Flawed victory. Be careful what you wish for, people. Sometimes you just can't win. Sometimes you really realize that all too late that you've been fighting for the wrong cause. Sometimes you fight so hard that you end up too burnt out to enjoy the your victory. And sometimes you're just a great big idiot who messes things up so badly that any potential success is immediately buried under a huge warm heap of stinking failure. Those latter shambolic resolutions are the ones you're going to discuss today. But be warned, though, you shouldn't really need telling that this feature is going to be discussing games endings a lot. If you fear spoilers, you may sure skip ahead as soon as blah, 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 blah. Right, let's go into this list. Let's see what they got. Gears of War Trilogy. The victories in the first Gears of War, the Cold forces managed to push back the Locust Horde and trigger a light mass bomb in the enemy's subterranean stronghold, with the aim of wiping out their entire species where it lives. In Gears of War 2, the Cogs sink the entirety of Jacinto province into the sea in order to take out the invading Locusts. In Gears 3, they used a DNA-coded genocide device to finish off the rest of them worldwide. It's pointless because the light mass bomb systematically fails to kill the Locust, but is also a more efficient in creating environmental hazard that causes rust lung, a disease that results in millions of humans dying by coughing their insides up. The sinking of Jacinto fails too, when the handy side effect of destroying the last human safe zone on dry land. By the time Locusts are dead, the most of the planet is uninhabitable, and there are only about 17 people left, 9 if you count those not currently dying. Yeah, exactly. We've got this. Final Fights, yes. Big fan of this. The Victory. This one very much under the category of how He Who Fights Monsters. After helping defeat the Mad Gear Gang in the first Final Fight, Cody returned for a second bout of violence. Citywide vengeance in Final Fight Revenge. After a year spent wandering the world in search of scuffle-based self-improvement, his second victory over the newly reformed Mad Gear Gang should have been a no-brainer. However, alas, by this point, Cody's ongoing quest for fisticuffs had left him unable to settle down, with the fight becoming an all-consuming lifestyle. As a result, he got arrested, leading to a bitter separation from his girlfriend, who was trying to rescue him in the first place. before being sent to prison. He escaped in time for Street Fighter Alpha 3, but he's never really found peace. Yeah, exactly. What we got here? Cloner Beach Volleyball. I'll skip this one because I've never heard of this game. What's the next one? Oh, here we go. Yes, this one I actually liked. Mortal Kombat 2011. After an exhaustingly long campaign spanning the truncated plots of the first three games, crossing two dimensions and taking in the deaths of thousands, if not millions, during Shao Kahn's invasion of Earthrealm, Raiden finally manages to enlist the help of the Elder Gods. While Liu Kang dead, the Thunder God takes on the dictator and eventually beats him with a magic flamethrower. A swarm of tiny magic flame snakes nibble at Kahn like those little fish that supposedly eat the dead skin off your feet. He dies. It's pointless because the second Raiden walks away from the scene of the battle, mourning the great cost of victory alongside Johnny Cage and Sonya, another portal opens up. Quan Chi and Shinnok walk through and immediately reveal that having Earthrealm and Outworld fight each other to a standstill was their plan all along. While both sides battered, it's now time for Netherrealm to have a pop at the title fight. But yeah, I mean, that leaves it open for the sequel, and the fact that it's 2011 now, it was 2011, that's 2014. I want to see that new Tekken game, Mortal Kombat game. Sticking with Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat Armageddon. Shao Kahn wins as the victory. As the game itself tells us, Blaze was no match for Shao Kahn the Conqueror. His strength increased tenfold. The sources of light could not fend off his final invasion as he merged each realm with Outworld. Sound good? Well, it's pointless because it turns out that when you're a realm conquering sociopath with a worldview entirely focused on suppressing millions of innocents via the medium of snapping your arms off, once you run out of things to conquer, you have a hard time finding much of a point going on. So much like Alexander the Great, when Shao Kahn saw the breath of his domain, he wept for those, for there was no more worlds to conquer or arms to snap off, and then he went mad. Actually, those last two bits aren't much like Alexander the Great, but you get the point. Just once you've conquered everything, what's left of to do? I mean, you know, if you read comics, probably much the same for Galactus. Once he's eaten every world, he will probably just die of hunger with an empty universe. Rival Schools, great game, which I loved. Had the demo, never played the full game, but it was really, really fun. The victory. Having staved off all attacks against his growing regime, Secret's last boss, bad guy Hyo Inuana, is set to unleash an assault on the wider realm beyond his school to the eventual end of taking over the whole country. His foot soldiers are already strong and loyal, and it looks like no one is able to stop him. It's pointless because Hyo realizes that there's a price to pay for victory. More specifically, the price to pay for victory by the way of being a big brainwashing bastard. He has the loyalty of his troops, but none of them like or ever even trust him. Even worse, he has destroyed his relationship with his brother. Loneliness takes hold, and in the forms of crippling headaches and foot-all sobbing fits, there's no win in taking over the country if that means that everyone in this country hates you. That could be said for same for presidents and prime ministers alike. What we got here? Yeah, Sonic Riders. After a long rivalry and a whole load of third-party influence by Dr. Robotnik. I'm glad they say Dr. Robotnik, not Eggman. Sonic and Jet managed to track down a prophesized, supposedly immensely powerful treasure of the ancient Babylonians. But Robotnik has followed the whole way and forces them to hand over the spoils at gunpoint. They do. Robotnik wins, sort of. It's pointless because there's a treasure. The treasure is a carpet. Robotnik is utterly unimpressed and seems to pass out in disappointment. Look, he's really, really unimpressed, okay? But then what's this? Tails has noticed that the carpet isn't just a load of old rag, but totally a magic carpet capable of flight. Thing is, Sonic Riders is set in an age of jet-powered flying hoverboards. A flying carpet is only really impressive if you're in ancient Babylonians. Basically no one wins. What was the next one? Twisted Metal series, yes. To be fair, the most victories in the Twisted Metal series end up being pointless. Tournament organizer Calypso, who you see has the ability to grant the winner any one wish, but almost inevitably pulls the literal genie clause in order to twist their request into something decidedly rubbish. But for the sake of an example, I'm going to pick out Mikey and Stu's ending from Twisted Metal 2. They ask for the ability to fly. Calypso grants it. It's pointless because Mike and Stu leap off a skyscraper. They instantly plummet to the ground and die with their faces staffed halfway through a pavement, as is traditional in these situations. And Calypso produces two plane tickets. I did like that. That was quite fun. But I'd say that's pretty much wraps it up for the show this week. It was a good show this week, actually. You know, now the I have a new cable and the audio is much better. I'd say thanks for listening, everyone. So if you do want to call in the show anytime, just add to Antisocial Game Radio to your contacts. So if you want to email us, usual email address, antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. The Facebook group is facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. Also, like us on Facebook, because I appreciate the likes. Facebook.com/AntisocialGamerRadio. And also, if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's @MLRGamerRadio. I'm not too sure what the topic is for next week. I will think of something, as I usually do. I've got a list of a few things, but trying to work out something is a bit tricky, and I will get back to you and all of you soon, which is why you should sort of like the Facebook page, join the Facebook group, follow us on Twitter. That way you get all the information as soon as I can think of it and post it up. I'm looking forward to sort of, hanging up now and going to play some Final Fantasy and, going on the loo later and playing some Battle Trose. So don't forget as well, if you're a big Final Fantasy 14 fan, give old Limit Breaker Radio a listen. Tell them I sent you. They'll make them happy. It's good to be back on the air doing radio again, and it's a good year for gaming this year. I'll be getting one of the new consoles. I'll get a whole bunch of new games. I've got the Manchester trip, which I'm really looking forward to in a couple of months. It's gonna be a live event this year, so I'm basically flying back to America, which I can't wait. It's a really good year for old me to this year. I have been Ashley. This has been Antisocial Gamer Radio, and I will see you again next week at 4 p.m. Eastern and 9 o'clock UK time. See you a lot later, people. Have fun and enjoy the rest of your week.
Actually brought anything to the table?
Bag of burden that British piece of shit was. Holy shit.
A woman can pilot.
From everyone here at BBC Radio 4, this is Alice Arnold, hoping that you sleep well and wishing you a very good night. Good night.
The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sierra, south at Sierra, south or southwest, or northwest, or northeast or east. Occasional rain, wintry showers, occasional rain, rain or showers, occasional rain, moderate or poor, becoming moderate.